The first about 9 or 10 chapters in Proverbs deal with advice given as a father would give his son. And we have looked so far in the first 4 chapters at all kinds of advice on how to live a holy life, how to live a life that's acceptable to God. Much of it certainly applies to young people, but it, as we've mentioned before, applies to everyone. Tonight's lesson is no different. Tonight's lesson revolves around the proper channel for passion. The proper channel for passion. The first half of Proverbs talks about the improper channel, and the last half basically talks about the proper channel. There's lots of different titles you could give to this lesson. I originally called it The Forbidden Woman. That's what I gave David as a title. It could be called a number of things very similar to that. But that's certainly one of them. And we need to think about it as if a father has taken his son aside. He's at that point in his life when he will be thinking more about a spouse and about marriage. And he is telling him what kind of person to look for and what to avoid, or whom to avoid. Great advice here in Proverbs chapter 5, even to people and especially to people who are married, about what to avoid once you get married and how to help you stay married. So tremendous amount of advice in this chapter, Proverbs chapter 5. He begins in Proverbs chapter 5 by saying, "My son, pay attention to my wisdom, lend your ear to my understanding that you may preserve discretion and your lips may keep knowledge." And we see the image of a father taking his son aside and saying, "Son, what I'm going to tell you is vital to your future." It says, if you want to, as he puts it, preserve or guard discretion, listen to what I have to say. Discretion in some translations is translated prudence. The idea also comes from the Hebrew of being thoughtful, which means you think about these things before you do them. So the idea of being discreet, having understanding, again being prudent, being thoughtful, being insightful. So he's passing on to his son in this kind of picture that he's painting, wisdom and advice. Of course, it's coming from God, so we know it's perfect advice. But I think the mental image of a father talking to a son about marriage and about consequences of actions. So much of Proverbs is about making right decisions, making wise decisions, making the appropriate or proper decisions. And that's certainly what this is about, because Satan is doing what? Satan is trying to trap people. And he certainly does an incredible job. If he was here, we could pat him on the back, because he does an incredible job of ensnaring people. And probably more so in the idea in the realm of marriage and passion than in any other. And he does an incredible job of it, which makes our job as parents and Christians in general even tougher, because we live in a society that is so far removed from the biblical idea of marriage and lust and passion and so forth. And it's as far removed from what the Bible talks about as you could imagine. So that's why Proverbs chapter 5, as well as a number of other places, Proverbs chapter 7 talks about it, and a number of other number of Psalms talks about it, places in the New Testament, all talk about the importance of this topic, of this theme. So he tells his son, listen to what I have to say so you will not take the wrong path and make the wrong choice. That's what he tells him. So here's his first bit of advice. Talks about the immoral woman, the peril, the danger of the immoral woman. For the lips of an immoral woman drip honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil. But in the end, she's bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lay a hold of hell. Lest you ponder her path of life, her ways are unstable. You do not know them. Does Satan picture immorality as something ugly and dark and disgusting? No. What does Satan do? Pictures it as something beautiful and wonderful. And that's what Satan does in our society, doesn't he? That's what he does. The whole idea of passion and lust and romance and all kinds of things in our society, Satan has taken the biblical idea and turned it into something far removed from the biblical idea. So this immoral woman, immorality in particular, fornication and adultery, all falling under this heading, he's taken that and he's making it look sweet, enticing. So he says, she drips honey. Well, not literally. But honey is sweet. It gives life. It's food. It's sustenance. Her mouth is smoother than oil. See the enticement? It's like she's trying to entrap him. So the father is telling the son, watch out. Because she looks good. So be careful. Avoid her. Because he says, in the end, she's what? As bitter as wormwood. See, she appears sweet as honey, but in reality, she's as bitter as wormwood. If you go that path, you're going to end up with bitterness because you chose the wrong woman. Sharp as a two-edged sword, her feet go down to death. And that's what often leads people to being destroyed. Sometimes it leads to physical destruction because people who choose the wrong woman, choose an immoral woman, can come down with things that physically will destroy them. But ultimately, what he's talking about is spiritual death. Says, by making that wrong decision to do something you know you shouldn't do, then you can be led to death because that's what the woman is doing. But Satan is the one behind it because Satan is making her so attractive. See, sweet as honey and smooth as oil. But he says, don't fall for it because in reality it's bitter as wormwood. And instead of providing you something that is good for you, like honey, it's actually going to lead to your death, spiritual death. And just think about, imagine for a minute, how many people will be lost eternally in hell because of that very thing. Maybe more than any other reason. So no wonder there is so much discussion in the Bible about it, Old Testament and New Testament. It is filled with the advice about making wrong and right choices. Her feet go down to death. Boy, if her steps lay hold of hell. That's where she ends. That's where it goes to. She is flattering. She says things to entice you. And he says, son, you need to be extremely cautious. And just think about, you know, people before they're married, people after they're married, being enticed by that immoral woman. Now, he uses, back at this time, it would have been unheard of to have reversed the tables. In other words, for a woman to commit some type of immorality a married woman with another man. But it's usually, and that's why it's put in this context, it's usually the man going after that immoral woman. But certainly for us, it can go either way. But he says, son, you need to be extremely cautious because what looks good, sweet, flattering, wonderful can lead to your death. And of course, we know in our society that it certainly does. So he says, therefore, hear me now, my children, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Remove your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your honor to others and your years to the cruel one, lest aliens be filled with your wealth and your labors go to the house of a foreigner. And you mourn at last when your flesh and your body are consumed and say, how I have hated instruction and my heart despised correction. I've not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined my ear to those who instructed me. I was on the verge of total ruin in the midst of the assembly and congregation. It says, there's all the bad things that can happen to you. If you want to sum up what he's saying in those verses, that's what it is. Here's all these terrible things that can happen to you. Whether it is committed outside of marriage, before marriage, in a marriage between two people who have no right to be engaged in that type of illicit activity, it doesn't matter. He says all of that will bring destruction. Doesn't make any difference when it happens or to whom it happens with. That will be your end. So he says, remove your way far from her. Don't see how close you can get without actually doing something sinful or wicked. Don't see how close you can get. See how far away you can get. Don't put yourself in situations where that can happen. And I think about some preachers I've known who made those wrong decisions and who did that. They had affairs with the church secretary. They ran off with an elder's wife. The youth minister had an affair with one of the deacon's wives. All those things actually happened in the Lord's church in just the past few years. Amazing. And it all happened because people made wrong choices and they found themselves in situations. So he says, remove yourself as far from those situations as possible, regardless of who you are. He says, listen, don't even go near the door of her house. Don't even go near that situation. Stay as far away from it as possible. See, that's what he's telling them. And he says, by doing that, it is much less likely that you fall into Satan's trap. Tremendous advice, not just for preachers or people, but anybody. It says, don't even go near her. Because if you do, your honor, and some translations have the idea here of life, of vigor, will be given to others, and your years to the cruel one. He says, that can happen. Someone who decides, like those cases I just mentioned, there's not just one life that's ruined. A whole number of people's lives are ruined because of those decisions. Because of those decisions, many people's lives are ruined. And he says, you're giving your honor away. You're giving it away. Because if you're married, you first of all are breaking your vows of that contract that you made. You're breaking those vows. The other person is married, they're breaking vows. So there's not just one person involved. There's a number of people involved, and they're giving their years to the cruel one. They're giving up so many things because of those bad decisions. He says, you're going to mourn at last. Your flesh and your body are consumed, and that's physically that can happen. I mean, just think about all the STDs in our country and the world, as far as that goes, and all the pain that comes from those. Bad decisions. Instead of staying away from the immoral woman, what have they done? They entered the door. The door that he says, don't even go near it, let alone open it. Stay away from it. And he says, you might end up saying, hell, I have hated instruction. A lot of people, after they've done that, are sorry, but guess what? It's too late. It's too late. They're sorrowful, but they didn't listen. They despised, as it says, correction when it could have helped them. So instead of listening to the advice, they chose not to, and so they end up being sorrowful for those terrible decisions they made. Again, whether it was between a single person and a married person, between two married people or whoever, he says those decisions you will be sorry for. And he ends up by saying, I was on the verge of total ruin. He says, in the very midst of the assembly and the congregation. You can see how he's feeling about those decisions and realizing it. But he says, all of that can be avoided. That's the first half of the Proverbs. He gives the negative side first. About not following the immoral woman, staying away from her, staying away from her door. He says, now, since everybody has been given by God this passion, and it's a good passion, without this passion there is no way the human race would multiply and continue. So that was something God gave us. So God says, through Solomon, he says, that's the way not. That's an unholy passion. That's a passion that's not allowed. But he says, here is how that passion is supposed to be channeled. He says, here is the way it's supposed to be channeled. A holy way. Unfortunately, going all the way back to the days of the Puritans and so forth, they decided that those types of things were to be completely avoided. Husbands and wives, if you were a Puritan, you weren't even supposed to hold hands in public. That was a terrible wrong. So they took this idea of romance and passion between married people and said it was wrong. That's not what the Bible says at all. The Bible essentially says husbands and wives are given free rein in marriage. As long as it's in marriage. That's where the passion is supposed to be. That's where the romance is supposed to be. Within marriage. So that's what he says in the last half of this chapter. He says, on the positive side, now, he says, drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well. And of course, water represented life to those people. And of course, that's what it represents today. I mean, that's where a new life comes from. It's from a husband and wife and their marital relations. That's where new life comes from. So Solomon here uses this idea of water representing life to represent relations between a husband and wife. So he says, you drink water from your own cistern, not anybody else's. A husband, you have one wife, and that's it. End of story. You don't drink water from any other cisterns. You have one that you're allowed to drink from, and that's it. Period. And that's what he is, again, like we have the father telling the son. When you get married, son, you have one wife, and that's it. You don't go looking for relations anywhere else. It is just with your wife, period. I know our world, you know, that means absolutely nothing to most people in the world, but yet that's what the Bible says. Very clearly. There is nothing, the Bible says, in any way sinful or wicked about relations and romance and passion in marriage. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, this is just one place we're going to go. We'll go to another one later. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, notice verse 2. He says, nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, because God has given men and women that passion and that desire, which is good and lawful and necessary, he says, let each man have his own wife and let each woman have her own husband. There's drinking water from your own cistern. One husband, one wife. Period. He says that's the way it's supposed to be. And he says when the husband and wife do what they're supposed to do, there's not going to be any desire to go to any other cisterns, as he puts it. Again, an appropriate analogy, especially for that time. He goes on, he says, should your fountains be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be only your own and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth. Many other places talk about that as well. You are given a wife. And he says it's the wife of your youth, and that is the one that you're to be what? Blessed with. Rejoice with her. He says that's what you're supposed to do. Again, don't be looking anywhere else. Don't be looking for that immoral woman, as he calls it in the first part of the book. Stay away from that. He says, as a loving deer and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times and always be enraptured. The idea is being intoxicated with her love. See, that's the way a husband and wife are supposed to be. Their passion is supposed to be for each other. And that's the biblical idea. We talk about where passion is to be channeled. It's supposed to be channeled between husband and wife. And this is often, if you read the book, Song of Solomon, almost that entire book uses those same types of images and pictures. I didn't even count. I finished studying the book about a month and a half ago or so. And in that image and that picture is painted for us over and over and over. It's about marital love, the whole book is, and marital joy and marital happiness and how husbands and wives are supposed to treat each other. And he uses that image over and over again. How wonderful it is. That's a marriage manual. Song of Solomon, every single chapter there is a marriage manual and a different aspect of marriage. And it's a great one. He says, for why should you, my son, be enraptured by an immoral woman, the forbidden woman, and be embraced in the arms of seductress. He says, you won't be if you just follow what I said, that you rejoice in the wife of your youth, that you drink water from your own cisterns. Then you won't be enraptured by anyone else. You'll be enraptured or intoxicated by your wife and no one else. He says, that's how you keep from committing fornication, committing adultery, committing any types of sexual immorality, is by being enraptured, intoxicated by your spouse. Because, he says, and he finishes up this chapter, he says, for the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths. In other words, God knows. God knows all of those things. He knows whether you're enraptured with your spouse. No, he knows those things. His own iniquities entrap the wicked man, and he's caught in the cords of his sin. He shall die for lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he shall go astray. See, the book ends just, or the chapter ends just like it started. The father is talking to his son, and he says, son, listen to my instruction. If you want to live a prudent life, a life of discretion, a life of understanding, a life of being insightful and being thoughtful, listen to what I have to say. And just what Solomon says in this one chapter, think about how many problems that would solve. Just imagine how many problems that would solve, and how many problems it would keep from ever happening in the first place. If people followed the advice Solomon gives, the instruction in this book. The person who doesn't listen, he says, shall die. And in the greatness of his folly, he'll go astray. So by not listening to this advice, he says, many people will die. And not necessarily physically, even though many will. He says they're going to die spiritually. And so many on that judgment day will be lost for the reason they did not listen to the advice of Proverbs chapter 5. And that's what happened to them. They didn't listen to that instruction. Instead of staying away from the door that was forbidden, they not only went to it, they opened it and entered it and closed the door behind them. But it says, if you want to avoid all that, then you stay away from that door. That door is just might as well have the word temptation on the front of it. Because that's what he means. Stay away from that door. And instead, be totally enraptured and intoxicated with your wife. He says, and that will help you avoid all of these pitfalls, all of this wickedness, all of these troubles, all of these problems, because you've listened to my advice. And again, that advice comes from God. And what an incredible chapter that is. Incredible chapter about marriage and about avoiding all these problems in marriage, even before marriage. He says that's how to avoid them. Listen to my instruction. I enjoyed this week reading and studying this chapter because of the instruction it gives and how much help it would be to so many people. Well, the lesson is yours. I hope this helps people who are married, people who are thinking about being married. Maybe you can help others who might be struggling with this. But what an important subject it is in our society and, unfortunately, in the church. Tonight, we see just as a father is giving advice to a son, God is telling us, if you want to come and be with me forever, listen to my instruction. Come to me as a believing, penitent, confessing individual who's willing to have their sins washed away. He says, I will give you a new life. And if you want that, I encourage you to come now as we stand and sing this song.